You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors that share valuable stories and helpful information who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today, our children's launch or failure to launch into adulthood, depending on the situation. My guests today are Aaron Bernard and Rohini Ross. Aaron is a therapeutic mentor for Vive Family Support Program and is a master's level mental health clinician. He helps males ranging from ages of 12 to 25 reach their various therapeutic goals. Some of the areas he likes to work on with his mentees are sobriety, assertive communication, time management, repairing relationships, employment, social skills, dating, and psychological issues. His therapeutic approach is designed to allow his mentees to feel comfortable in expressing their thoughts, ideas, and feelings without the fear of judgment. Rohini is the executive director of operations for the Vive Family Support Program. She started working with Vive as a parent coach in 2006. Within her current position, she serves as a clinical supervisor and oversees the operations of Vive. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of California and has a degree in counseling psychology with a certificate in consciousness, health, and healing from the University of Santa Monica. Rohini and Aaron, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
I am so glad to have you guys here. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. It is one of the issues in regards to working with young people while they're in the home. And being someone who is involved with them as they go to programs and such, you know, I recognize that in many cases, either before going to a program or in place of going to a program, or in some cases after coming back from a program, having somebody there that can be there, work with the family, and continue the positive things that are going on with that child, I think is just so important. So share a little bit about Vive so that our listeners kind of know the background and the purpose that Vive is out there serving.
Certainly. Well, at Vive, we really believe that the whole family needs to get involved in supporting their young person moving forward. And so we provide a family systems model. There's two clinicians that work with a family, a parent coach and a therapeutic mentor. And we also find that a lot of the families we work with have already done some kind of therapy and sort of office-based approach. And so we really like to approach things from a different point of view by helping get into the family's real world, their real life. And the therapeutic mentor works with a young person. They don't talk in an office-based setting. They meet in the home. They meet in the community. They do activities together. We find that this makes a real difference in terms of how the relationship builds. We find that trust increases more quickly, that they actually have fun. Sometimes Aaron will be sent out on an admissions meeting, and the parent's like, oh, my child just isn't going to participate in this. And then Aaron will meet them, and they're like, oh, this isn't so bad. So it really makes a difference in having that trust, because without the trust, the deeper level of therapeutic work can't happen. And so having a different frame of reference for creating the relationship really helps with that. Our mentors also are available in between sessions for texting, Skyping, phone calls, you know, in between time check-ins. And that also makes a difference in terms of making it feel like a more natural relationship, where kids can really open up, or young adults really feel like they've got someone who's there for them from a non-judgmental standpoint, where they can really be themselves, be seen as themselves, and just have that. And then the parents, it's a similar approach in terms of building trust. We really want to be there, not just on the scheduled 10 o'clock Tuesday morning session that we have. We want to be there on the Friday night when their young person's not coming home, or their young person's had some kind of issue or challenge and they're really feeling stressed. And by having the ability to connect more as best we can in the moment, it helps to decrease the potential for escalation. So all the work that the young person is doing then also can be reinforced and supported because the parents are also doing their work too, so that they're not showing up in the same way that they might have done in the past, and that their anxiety and emotional reactivity isn't getting the better of them, and that they can show up in the relationship in a more supportive and productive way. And that doesn't mean that they don't have boundaries and they don't hold firmly and healthy limits, but it does mean that things can hopefully be handled in a more supportive and less reactive way.
Now, I think that makes so much sense. And when you talk about working with the parents as well as working with the child, and it kind of reminds me of a story of a family that they had a young child that went to three different programs, and the father and kept at some point in time would come home, and then at some point in time would run away. And the father came to me and he said, "Alan," he goes, I don't understand. He goes, "Explain to me why these programs keep failing." And I said, "Well, I will say that his name was John." "Well, John, what's the common denominator?" And he thought about it for a minute and he said, "It's me, isn't it?" So my reason for bringing that up is I love the fact that we can work with the young people all we want. We can put a great mentor in their life. We can do all of these things. But if the parents aren't also following suit, are we really setting them up for failure? So I love the fact that you do that. Now, about what percentage would you say is working with the parent, and what percentage is working with the child?
Well, in terms of percentage approach, it's really 50-50. It may not be 50% in terms of time. We tend to spend more time with the young people because they're doing more activities. But in terms of actual shifting and changing, it's an equal opportunity event.
So, Aaron, when you first meet a young person that you're going to be working with, what are some of the things that you discuss with them right away to sort of see if this is going to be a good fit?
Well, when I meet with the young person or the young adult, actually, because like you said, it's 14 to 25, and I've even had 27, I always go over confidentiality. I let them, I talk about traditional therapy versus what Vive is all about. And I let them know that we're a community-based program. And quite often I don't know how to say this, but I'm just very authentic and very real. And I let them know that, whatever they put in, they get out. And I was also told a while ago that in grad school that therapy is 70% relationship. And so a lot of the activities that we do helps to foster that. And so a lot of my guys, they like to eat. So we bond a lot over, food. And they like, "You got to try this. It's my favorite restaurant." So we're trying like different restaurants. And some of the craziest things, actually, to go a little off topic, that I've done, I've gone bowling a lot. One of my guys, he doesn't know it, but he's getting a bowling ball for Christmas because he loves it now. I've gone to batting cages. And one of my guys made me get a pedicure for the first time ever this year. But it's just the whole, that the fact that I can do whatever it is that they want to do, that they find interesting, I think that helps to engage the person a little bit more. And they feel like they have their own support, their own therapy. And going back to what Rohini was saying, and what you were saying, is that the parents have their advocate, their voice, their person, their own therapist, and then the young adult or child, they have their person as well. And I think that helps them to engage a little bit more. And so I generally tend to focus on that a lot more. Like, it's not you, you're not the problem. You're a part of it, and so are your parents, but you're also part of the solution, and your parents are also part of the solution as well.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Now, part of the topic of the conversation is failure to launch. Now, that's, they did a movie on it. It's become a big term and everything else. But in your mind, what does failure to launch mean exactly? And what are some of the reasons teens and young adults have trouble launching these days?
Well, failure to launch happens when there's a stuckness in the developmental process. that is about launching into adulthood. And that can happen for, you know, many different reasons. And it's very important also to know your child and to not impose some kind of standard that isn't a fit for where your child is at. Some 18-year-olds are much more mature than other 18-year-olds. And, you know, we have to be able to be realistic about those expectations. But when, you know, a young adult is really having trouble moving forward and launching into the world, oftentimes one of the main underlying factors is anxiety and fear, not knowing how to do it. And oftentimes that comes under the guise of looking like I don't have any motivation. And the parents can think, well, he's just lazy or she's just lazy and I don't know, they don't want to do anything. But, you know, when we're working with the young people, they often have very similar goals to their parents. Or at least they have goals where they want to become an independent adult. Maybe it's not to do the same career or go to college in the same way that their parents were hoping they would. But they don't want to be staying at home. They want to be doing that, but they just don't know how to do it. And then they start to close in on themselves. And parents' anxiety and anger and frustration can then really take a toll on the relationship. And then there can't be any more communication at that point because it's just reactivity when trying to address the subject. Mm-hmm. And so that's where having a therapeutic mentor come in and be able to be a guide, be a support, but not have the emotional energy that has been attached to the parents, but to come in really as an advocate, to really listen and understand and make a difference. And Aaron can speak to this more. And then in terms of the parent side, we really work with parents in helping them to get their needs met more effectively. Oftentimes, a lot of the frustration and anger comes from parents trying to get their needs met through having their child's behavior look a certain way. And they don't have control over that. And then they feel powerless, they feel like victims, they feel resentful. And so we really support them with looking at, well, if your well-being isn't dependent on your child's behavior, how do you take care of yourself? What do you do to support your needs being met? What are the boundaries that you're not holding that you want to hold? Because oftentimes there's really practical boundaries that aren't being held, and the parents think, well, I can't do that because then, you know, and they have this, you know, disastrous future fantasy that, you know, may or may not be realistic at all. But when there's a mentor in place, it's so much easier for parents to then put those boundaries there because they know that their child isn't alone. Mm-hmm. They know that they're going to have support navigating, not having the money, not having the car, and, you know, whatever those boundaries are. And, you know, Aaron can speak to how that looks on his side.
Yeah, from my side, I would say a lot of the anxieties, everything you said is true, by the way. A lot of the young adults, they have this, some of it, the pressure comes from their parents, but some of that pressure comes from themselves. They see their mom and dad living this nice life with a nice house and a nice car, and they want that as well. And so sometimes the mom and dad are just supporters, like, hey, where do you want to go to school? And then for them, they internalize that differently because they want to have everything mom and dad has. So I think just showing up and just normalizing, I think, their anxieties and letting them know that the average person in America changes their career 4 times in a lifetime. Just like normalizing that people stumble in the beginning. It's okay to not know. It's okay to be unsure. It's okay not to have a plan, but that's why we're here, to help you identify what do you like, what are your interests, and try to make that interest into something that maybe pays your bills.
Okay. Now, in some of the areas, for instance, you know, we will get a call or something and they'll say, well, you know, one of the problems with this particular child is that they're socially awkward and they're making the decision now to send them to a program. Now, in that situation, is this the type of situation to where maybe having a mentor come in and work with them in the home may help them deal with that issue as well? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I thought, Aaron, you were going to handle that one.
Oh, my bad, sorry.
In terms of, you know, when it's appropriate to place in program or not, I think that Vive can definitely come in when there's not immediate safety issues at hand, where that really extra level or structure is needed, and that we can really work with families and keep young people in the home or close to home, and certainly work with any kind of social challenges, because the way that our program works, we can do real life situations. Aaron is out there, mm-hmm, getting job applications, meeting friends, you know, seeing the things that can get in the way of social issues that come up.
And I'm sorry I didn't answer the question, but I was going to say we're always assessing. And one of the things I will say is I do have a lot of guys who are on the spectrum. And so one of my guys right now, we go hiking on a weekly basis. And more in the more recent times, I've allowed his friends to come along. And so sometimes with his NLD and being on the spectrum and stuff like that, he overtalks people. Sometimes he doesn't even realize it. He's just constantly just saying things that are maybe inappropriate. And what's so awesome is that over time and change, I've been able to like say, hey, by the way, we were hanging out that time when we went hiking. This is what I noticed, blah, 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 blah. And in addition, sometimes I do role playing with a lot of my guys, and I basically show up and I help to normalize their frustration with having that diagnosis, whatever it may be, and then we work through it.
Right. Well, and I would think that also helps you, learn more about that particular person, because
absolutely.
On the one hand, if you're working one-on-one with him at his home or out to dinner or lunch or breakfast, it may help also to see him the way that he interacts with his friends.
Absolutely.
Because you're getting feedback from the parents, and that's their view of the situation. And then you get feedback from him, and that's his view. But to be able to see how his friends are viewing him has got to be quite a benefit for you to do the best you can for him.
Absolutely. And it's very exciting.
And one of the other areas that it's so powerful to have the two clinicians working with the family is that we do family meetings in the home with both the parents and the young person there. And so often the mentor is getting one picture of what family dynamics look like, and the parent coach is getting another picture of what family dynamics look like. And then you get them all in the same room together, and you can understand where they're getting their perspective from, but you can also see what they're not seeing based on the lens that they're looking through. And that's so helpful, because so often, sometimes with kids, they're like, I'm fine, nothing wrong, I'm okay at the beginning of therapy. And they're just, starting to trust and learn. And then the family meeting happens, and that really gives the mentor an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other side can happen where we really get to see from the parent coach side, oh, but you were saying you were handling it like this, and now I'm hearing that it's actually happening like this.
Yeah.
And really have the opportunity to work through things differently and have that support.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like that also puts everybody in a great position to be real.
Yes, and feel safe.
Yes.
I think quite often when a lot of my younger guys go into family meetings in the traditional therapy setting, which I like as well,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of us work in that on the side as well, but I think they feel like they're the problem. But in this instance, everyone has their own advocate, their support, and so I think that's where a lot of the work gets done. A lot of my guys, they may not say certain things in a traditional therapy setting because they don't feel supported, but now they're like, you know what, Mom and Dad, I feel like you yell all the time. Instead of speaking with me, you're yelling all the time. Or they identify things that, can be really heavy, but they feel supported. And so that's where the magic happens in the family meeting.
Right. And I would imagine in those same situations, then the parent advocate at that point may then look to the parent and go, did you realize that they felt this way? And now you have dialogue going on between the parent and child that probably wouldn't have got there because one's expecting them to scream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that failure to launch theme, so often the communication has broken down and there isn't the space for the understanding of what's really getting in the way. And the parents might have very unrealistic expectations of what those steps look like in order to make that step out of the home or make that step to college or make that step to applying for jobs. And through increasing the dialogue and increasing the understanding, that's how we can get to the solution, because it emerges through that. Mm-hmm. We don't go in and tell families what to do. We allow them to find the solutions that work for them, but it really requires relationship and communication to do that.
And I just want to say I've seen it work many, yeah. many times. I've seen, in terms of the failure to launch, I've seen guys launch through the Vive process, which for me is really exciting and gratifying. We've had some guys come up, start off with all this anxiety, but through the family meetings and the individual work and the parent coaching, everyone's anxiety and time starts to go down. And as anxiety goes down, the communication tends to go up and everyone starts getting more assertive, more proactive, and eventually the change just organically starts to happen. So I actually have a guy right now who's going to college in January. So I'm so excited he's leaving in January.
Well, and if you're comfortable with it, share with us a little bit of where this person was when you first met him versus now getting ready to go to college, excited about it, and moving forward.
This individual, awesome guy, by the way, disclaimer, just starting it off. He's such an awesome guy. Very smart, very intelligent, just like his parents. but they had different values and ideals on certain subjects, from drugs and alcohol to curfew to being an adult and what all of that looked like. And I think there was just a lot of anxiety around certain things like drugs and alcohol, curfew, future goals, jobs. And I just found that in the beginning, you said where he was, there was a lot of arguing, cursing, lots of aggression verbally. And in time, once again, eventually, you know, we got the emotional reactivity out of there, and we started giving everyone tips and tools for coping and for communication, and eventually it got better.
And as far as the schooling, you're saying he's getting ready to go to college now. Mm-hmm. Was all of that dragging into his schooling life also, as far as the problems and things?
Absolutely. He carried the weight from home into school and into work. And so it just affected him. He didn't know how to deal and how to cope. So we went through coping skills. We talked about how mom and dad were triggering him. We identified different triggers and whatnot. And eventually we started saying, like, this is what you do when mom and dad get like this. How can you respond differently? And we started talking to mom and dad, like, when you guys communicate, your son can't hear you when you're maybe condemning, for example. And so just identifying everyone's strengths, everyone's challenges, and then, you know, working to a common goal, which is to get him to college.
And along those lines, we have an email question that came in. It says, our son moved out of the house at the age of 18, telling us that he was an adult and wanted to make his own decision. Within 1 year, he was back home and signed up for college. Unfortunately, he's 26 years old now, takes one or two college classes a semester, and hasn't kept a job for more than a few months at a time. I want him, it says, I want to give him 2 months' notice and to get a full-time job, or and move out or join the military. My wife says I'm being too hard on him. Any suggestions?
Well, that's where it's really important for the parents to have the support to get on the same page. Because if one person's saying one thing, like in this situation, and the other parent's saying something different, then nothing tends to happen. And oftentimes one parent can be villainized at the expense of the other parent, not saying that they're intentionally meaning to do that. But it's very hard for one person to say, this is, you know, this is the hard line, and not have that be in agreement. So I would say definitely for the parents to find a way so that they can communicate and find that common boundary where that they're willing to both be on the same page regarding supporting. Now, I don't know the circumstances in this, and I don't know what the reasons would be that his wife would say, that's not what I'm supporting. But I would want to know what really is underlying this behavior. What's getting in the way of helping him to launch into the world and get on with his life? And how can he also get support with navigating whatever those challenges are? And maybe the military or maybe a full-time job is completely appropriate, but there's a reason that that's not happening. And that needs to get looked at as to see what that is. Otherwise, the behavior may shift temporarily, but there isn't a sustainable change. And that doesn't mean their son needs to live in the house while that's getting figured out. I know.
Aaron, do you want to say something? Do you want to add to that?
Well, I agree. The kid doesn't, or young adult doesn't necessarily have to live at home. And there's some instances where, because the tension was so great, we actually helped the family to shift into a place where that young adult was actually, quote unquote, he was grown, right? So we mm-hmm. helped them to find a place to live outside of the home. And that actually helped to facilitate better communication between mom and dad. And so I definitely don't always think that the kid needs to be at home.
Right. Okay. So. You know what? We're going to take a break in a little bit, but I want to tell everybody out there and this person, first of all, thank you for sending in the email question.
Yes.
And, you know, you can follow along with us. Okay. For those of you, if you're at a computer right now, you can go to www.vivefamilysupportprogram.com. You can open up another, another window in your computer. You can follow along. Afterwards, feel free to contact them with some of these questions. If you give a little more information, it's very possible they're going to have even more answers for you. So at this point, we are going to take a break. We will be right back in 1 minute. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry.
Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. We are talking about to launch or not to launch. That is the question. the area that we're talking about really comes down to families who have young people living in the home or possibly outside the home who are maybe not reaching the goals that maybe they're expecting of themselves or maybe the goals that their parents are expecting of them. VIVE Family Support Program is able to go in and work with them and really help them reach the goals that they're setting for themselves. Now, various questions and stuff, we actually got another email question that came in, and this one reads, my daughter refuses to go to school. She leaves the home in the morning, just doesn't make it to school. Do you have a homeschooling component to your program?
We don't have a homeschooling component to our program. However, we work with families to support them with finding, you know, what is the right educational fit for their child. We have referrals that we work with that support that. And I wouldn't necessarily say that homeschooling is the only option there. That may or may not get in, you know, help to get the academics done. We have families that have tried that option, but when the other issues aren't addressed, now they're in a battle, parent-child battle, mm-hmm. with not getting the online program done or whatever it is that they signed up with. And it's not really about changing the location. It's about what's really going on regarding learning challenges or anxiety issues or bullying. I mean, there could be so many components that interrupt that. And so if there can be a communication about why aren't you getting to school? And so often there's that question isn't a genuine curious question when it's asked. It's, you know, an angry question, and understandably so. It's concerning. It's scary when kids aren't doing what they're meant to be doing and you don't know where they are, what's going on, and it can be a real shock. But really, why is she not able to get through the door of the school?
I agree. I totally agree. Okay.
You know, that actually, it brings up another question that I had, which is about catching up on school credits. Mm-hmm. Many of the young people out there I know are struggling with getting caught up, and once something occurs that has set them back, it's very hard to move forward. Now, you know, do you help them get caught up so that they can graduate? Is that part of one of the things from a mentoring or tutoring standpoint?
I think for me, I more so go along the lines of the emotional support along the way. But like Rohini said, we do refer out and we help people find the appropriate schooling. There are some schools, for example, that have one-on-one programs where there's one teacher, one student, and that works better for some people. They even have, like, the one I'm thinking of, they have a homework cafe where all the homework gets done at school, which then, you know, when the kid gets home or the young adult gets home, it's minimizing conflict. There's one less thing for the parent to worry about with their child.
Yeah.
So it's always about finding the appropriate schooling and working closely with an education consultant and things of that nature and just providing the emotional support, I think, along the way. But we don't actually do academics. But I have sat down and I've tried helping guys with their homework and going back to my high school days of like, ooh, algebra, it's been a while. But I have definitely showed up just because I think sometimes just showing up and sitting with them in the moment for whatever that thing is. And in this case, maybe school. I found that to be really helpful. I think they have too, because we went over the math, we went over the social studies, the history rather, or whatever the subject is. And that way I've supported them academically.
And one of the other ways that we've helped in the academics is working very closely with a tutor who has the actual skill set, perhaps, for those, right, that subject matter. But we can help to look at what's getting in the way of the executive functioning skills, the time management skills. And when we have a good relationship with a tutor or school counselor or whoever that person is, our mentors can do that on the ground work to really help deepen what's going on academically.
And in terms of also, I just remember academic support. A lot of times I do drop my guys off to the tutor. I've helped plan their week out in terms of time management. And so we'll get out a calendar together. They don't have a calendar. I've literally brought them planners and calendars and things of that nature so that they could, have a smoother transition in academically and stuff like that.
All right. So bring them some of the tools for success.
Absolutely. Folders, binders, calendars, anything to help.
Now, you know, explain a little bit about, you know, the difference between therapeutic mentorship and parent coaching.
Well, what we find in terms of building the trust within the relationship, to not have the same person be the young person's advocate as the parents can make a really big difference. And it doesn't mean that we're not working together as a team, and it doesn't mean that they don't know that we're working together as a team, but it just feels very different. So the therapeutic mentor really works with the young person, and they show up for them, they're their advocate, and they communicate with the parent coach so that there's clear communication there. And the parent coach works directly with the parents. They're their advocate, and they support them, and they work obviously closely with the mentor, and the work comes together in the meetings. So the parent coach's work really focuses on supporting the parents with taking care of themselves, with getting their needs met, with teaching them mindfulness skills, ways to reduce their reactivity, ways so that they can feel better independently of where their child is at. Because so often what we see is when parents are really engaged in the VIVE work, it helps our outcomes, it helps the speed of the work that we do. And when parents are willing to make those changes first, the young person is modeled to them, there's a different emotional environment in the mm-hmm. home or in the relationship, and so it's so much easier for them to then take those next steps. And the mentor is there to really be that grounding element. And I'll let Aaron speak to that.
And I was going to just say, I feel that everyone feels, from my experience and from what I've heard, that they have their own voice. And I think a lot of times, once again, I like traditional therapy in the office, disclaimer, but I do find that in this case with VIVE, everyone has their own voice. I find that a lot of my guys find that extremely helpful. They don't feel like I'm in cahoots with their parents because they know that their parents has their own voice, their own advocate. And so I find that to be, I think, some of the big, what's the word I'm looking for? Just the thing that helps it to work. That and the fact that when we come to the family meetings, everyone has their voice once again.
That's great.
And that's one of the things that we have to work with the parents on sometimes, is helping them understand that the mentor isn't there to exercise their agenda. That doesn't mean that the mentor isn't there to support their child with moving forward in healthy ways, but they are going to support their child with identifying what that is for themselves, how they're going to get to that for themselves, so that they're not seen as, oh, well, this is just another arm of my parents trying to control me or tell me what to do, that there can be a real therapeutic relationship there.
Yeah. And we're very objective. So I think, mm-hmm. That also, just to be a little gray and go to the other side, there have been times, though, in family meetings that I found that some of my guys might have been inappropriate. And I would say so aloud. And that I've also seen parent coaches also side with the mentee. So it's just like, we're just really there, not just individually for, I'm not just there for the mentee and Rohini, it's not just there for the parents, but we're really there for the family system. We just want the system to be a healthier system. And so in general, we do support them individually, but we are always looking to see what can we do to make the system a healthier one.
Right. So in other words, for those that are trying to visualize this, this is not like a court of law where you have somebody that's taking one person's side, even if it doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
Good point.
One of the places in which I prepare for these shows is at the gym. And I pedal, and there are people at the gym that know me, that know what I'm doing, and they come up and talk to me. Oh, who's going to be on this week? Somebody came up about 3 days ago, and so they asked me, and so I started telling them a little bit about VIVE and what we were going to be talking about. And their question was, so how do they stay in contact with them? Do they move into the house with them?
Feels like it. Just kidding.
So Aaron, maybe if you could share about how much time is actually put in, and how do you, how much of that is in person, how much of that is texting, calling,
It really, honestly, just depends on the client, the family, and the gender even. I think that some of my guys, some of them, in the beginning at least, they don't talk as much. So at the bare minimum, I see them on average for about 2 hours a week, once a week. And if the family signs up for, two sessions a week. It'll be maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours. And then as they get more comfortable, I find that they use me a lot more for phone conversations. Like, and by the way, Aaron, I'm having a crisis. And literally they'll call sometimes at 11 o'clock at night just saying, Aaron, it's going down. It's happening right now. And so I just show up as appropriate. There have been times they call later, but we do have boundaries for ourselves. But if I'm awake randomly at 12, I'll answer the phone call. And I'll just show up for them in that way. Sometimes we have Skype sessions during in the middle of the week. And if they're traveling or something like that, we're very flexible in how we do therapy. So the care doesn't have to actually stop. So sometimes my guys will go, oh, we're going on vacation for a week. And I'll have a Skype session with them. So really putting a number on it's really difficult. But I see them for at least 2 hours a week on average. And then, I don't know, anywhere for like 15 minutes to an hour extra in between.
You mean you're not going with them to Hawaii?
I asked a couple of times. Didn't quite pan out so well.
And sometimes it's actually the parents that use more of the in-between time, especially at the beginning of when we start working with a family. The parents oftentimes really make good use of that time so that they're taking care of themselves and not getting as stressed out and recognizing when they're really needing support, feeling out of their depth, and then they can reach out to their parent coach and talk it through and get more centered and clear-minded and realize, oh, no, this is something that does need to be addressed now, or you know what, I'm going to wait until I'm feeling better and then I'm going to address this with my child. So they use a lot of that in-between time and it makes a big difference.
That's great. You know, we have a instant message coming across that says, my brother's son, who is 19, has declared that he will continue to live at home to be of assistance to his parents. but he does next to nothing to help them. I partially blame my sister-in-law, who waits on, and they use the first name of the young person, hand and foot, and negates my brother's efforts to get him either in college or working. Do you have any recommendations I can pass on to them?
Good one. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, he's obviously got a generous heart.
Yes.
Again, it's looking at what's, it sounds like, again, there's a difference of agreement between the husband and wife in this situation. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't anything where the young person is, you know, needing specific help regarding, the place to start really is in that marital relationship and finding a way to hear each other and find out what each other's needs are and what's going to work. And then if their son really is needing support with navigating that next step to college, what's going to really support that child with moving forward?
And I would say for me, let's just say they signed up with Vive. I would identify his goals. I would identify what helping mom and dad actually is and what that means to him. And for me, I think in the beginning, I would just quote unquote show up while the parent coach does a lot of the work in terms of getting the parents on a united front. Because I think once they're on a united, they have that united front, then they could start presenting things of what things look like, what they expect, the expectations rather. But I would just show up, identify the goals, and...
And oftentimes the parent that is perceived, and I'm not saying this is what's happening in that situation, but oftentimes the parent is that's perceived as the one that's enabling, there's oftentimes a reason that that behavior is there, that there's something recognized where something's amiss, and if I don't do this, then things aren't going to work out. And what we can help them to see is that that's not the only way of addressing that, and that... Actually, yes, you're right. Your son or your daughter may have some challenges and may have more anxiety than the average child and really not be feeling comfortable and confident making that next step. But the way that you're navigating that with them isn't really supporting them with growing and learning those skills and feeling more self-esteem and more confident inside of themselves. And when they see that, they're like, oh, well, that's what I want for my child. I won't keep doing it this way then. What else is there? And that's what we can really help them with.
All right. And it sounds like you're just shining a light on it.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Them. Yeah. And with this young man, I got to give him points for his approach, you know.
He's really smart.
I declare that I'm going to live with them forever because they need my assistance. Going along with the same thing, I think I'm going to declare that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett need my assistance.
Hey.
So I'm going to be moving in any time now,
me
guys.
Me too. I think Oprah needs an extra son. I declare.
You're up for adoption.
I'm up for adoption. I love my mama. I'm up for adopted.
So that get me off. I'm headed up towards Washington now to see Mr. Gates.
Hey.
We have another message that's coming in. This one says, as a high school counselor, parents of my students constantly complain that their kids are spending the majority of their free time playing video games or on the phone texting, not participating in more productive or outdoor activities. I believe we are just at the forefront of understanding the great damage such easy access to personal technology is doing to our youth. I would love to hear your opinion.
That's such a tricky one.
Well, technology, again, with each child, they're going to have to find their mm-hmm. what is your child able to tolerate in terms of access to electronics, and that's going to depend on their level of maturity. It's going to depend on their age. Obviously, if they're focusing all of their time on electronics at the expense of friendships and homework and other activities, that's not healthy. And it really is important for parents to help their kids regulate and set boundaries and limits and guidelines on that. And there's plenty of ways to do that. There's settings that you can do on mobile devices where they turn off at certain times. Mm-hmm. There's, one family, their child refused to turn in their mobile phone, and the parents thought there was nothing they could do about it. And it hadn't even occurred to them that they could turn the phone off, and right. they would yeah. not have the mobile phone if they weren't able to come to some agreement around it. Now, obviously, the more there can be understanding and communication and agreement on that, the easier it is going to be to enforce and implement. But sometimes you have to sort of start out with some of the more challenging limits to actually earn back a way of navigating mm-hmm. this in a healthy way. I mean, I'm a parent. I have kids. I have to navigate this in a pretty consistent way with them. And it's, I just have the priorities of once you've done your chores and your homework, that's when you get it. And sometimes, my husband takes the phone in the car to work, so it's not even in the house.
And then also some of the tricky parts, is that academically in schools now, you need your laptop. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's just like, what do parents do? I think I've seen this work where they allow the kid to have the laptop at school. They sometimes manage the internet histories and, they have the kids turn in the laptop at night because some, kids and young adults have addictive personalities. And so, I think parents want to be mindful of their kid. Is their kid an addict? Are they just, abusing it? Is it really that bad? Because sometimes I think culturally speaking, I was told also from some parents that this is new for them. All this technology use. And so I think it's just figuring out where everyone is, what's healthy, what's not healthy. Is it affecting their grades? Is it affecting the relationships between the people in the home and others? What is the kid actually doing on the internet? Are they, looking at pornography? Are they playing World of Warcraft? Or are they actually studying? So just finding out what's actually happening and engaging in healthy conversation often helps.
Mm-hmm. And another health factor regarding electronics is making sure kids get adequate sleep. The teenage brain, the young adult brain is still developing and growing at an amazing rate, and sleep is so important.
Yeah.
And I know how I feel when I don't get enough sleep, and teenagers with all that going on and not getting enough sleep, it's really detrimental to their mood and well-being mm-hmm. overall, and the family's well-being.
Absolutely. Now, one of the questions that I wanted to make sure we touched on has to do with how do you deal with divorced families? I mean, from this standpoint, obviously now let's say that you have a young person that's under 18 that's still living in the home, but they are 1 week at one house and they're 1 week at the other house. So now you have a mentor that's going to two different houses, but you also have a parent coach that's dealing with two different families. How do you get them to get on the same page?
And it's so crucial that parents, whether they're divorced or not, that they get on the same page.
Absolutely.
And that's what we really strive to help parents understand. And to the best of their abilities, to put their differences aside, whatever animosity they have toward each other, to be able to have that on the back burner when it comes to issues related to their kids. And most of the time, families that work with us that are divorced are able to have the same parent coach, and they're able to come together and hear each other and to the benefit of their child. And, you know, that's why also the parent coaching is so important, because they can air things out without the kid being present.
Yes.
And, you know, work through some of that material that's really not appropriate for the kids to be involved in, so that when we come together in the family meetings, things are addressed in a much healthier way, and the parents are able to, you know, be that united front, even though they may not be in the same home together. Or if there are going to be differences because there's different values in the homes, that it's understood how that's going to be navigated, so it's not as disruptive and painful for the young person involved.
I agree. It's so painful for the young person involved to hear mom talk badly about dad, or to hear dad talk badly about mom. And quite often, parents get so emotionally, you know, reactive that they do that, but they don't realize how much they're actually hurting their child. And you know, if I could encourage parents to just get on the same page and be, you know, more proactive, I just want to encourage everyone to do that, because I get to see firsthand how it really damages and hurts them. And in terms of going back to failure to launch, I think it actually affects them emotionally, and it affects their decision to move forward, to not move forward. And a lot of times they get so stuck emotionally, the kid that is, that because of mom and dad's stuff, you know, academically they start to struggle, or professionally if they're looking for a job.
Yeah. I was going to say, and I think it's a great point, because not only is the child seeing this, but they can also be using that, because once they see it, they can use it to change the focus, because mm-hmm. the focus is on them, but they go, you know, if I push this button on mom or this button on dad,
yes.
and I get them going against each other, all of a sudden nobody's focusing on me anymore.
Or it can be the other way around. Even with young adult kids, they can, not necessarily consciously, but stir things up, because it gets mom and dad talking when they haven't been talking.
Mm-hmm.
And or it gives them that fantasy that somehow things might work out again. And I'm not saying that they're doing that in a manipulative way, but there's such a lot of unresolved emotional material that comes up related to divorce, that things can just come out sideways like that.
Mm-hmm. And it's important for everyone to remember, I think, that I'm not a parent, but I know my parents, they model everything. And so a lot of times I take all their good, and they don't have too much bad, but I leave some of the bad. And I think parents are always modeling what is quote unquote okay. You know, so I come from a blended family. And the one thing I love that my mom didn't do, she never talked bad about my dad. And so when I actually had the opportunity to interact with him, you know, it was just like I had a clean slate, and I just feel like I respect her so much more for not actually talking bad about him, you know. So and for years, actually, I'll just go a step further. I didn't even know that my blended family wasn't quote unquote perfect. I thought I came from the perfect family. So, you know, I just think you really can affect your child emotionally for the good or for the bad when you talk badly about, or not talk badly about, the other parent.
Well, you know, we only have a couple of minutes. I, as most people know that listen to the show, I love a success story. Can you give us a success story? And then if there's any news about Vive that we should know about before we close.
I'll try to make it really, really quick, because I have several success stories, but I've literally had guys come in just quote unquote emotionally broken, quote unquote damaged, trauma situations, and just feeling like failures, just down on themselves, really, really negative, self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. And, you know, through the Vive process of getting emotional support for themselves and for their parents, and having these family meetings, I've seen guys go from that to eventually cutting back on marijuana, eventually some of them actually going abstinent on marijuana. I've seen them go from just yelling and cursing at mom and not being able to stay in the same room as them to giving hugs, which for me is like huge, to even saying, mom, dad, I love you, thank you. You know, and I've seen parents just feel really warm. I've seen some guys go from not being able to get work, because we help them just along the way to apply for, you know, for jobs and do interviews. We role play and things like that. To one of my guys is making a very good amount of money right now as a young adult. He's moved out of state, got a job, got his own place, got a new car, has friends. So I've seen many things happen from, you know, socially to academically to professionally. I just seen a lot of growth and a lot of change. And I just think a lot of it's in the magic. The magic is everyone having their own advocate, and coming together once a month for a family meeting.
All right, Rohini, any news about Vibe that we should know about before we close?
Well, one of the exciting things we're working on right now is a revision of our book, Chaos to Connection, and that's going to be out next year sometime, and so we're excited about that. And we're also opening our office in Washington, D.C.
All right. Congratulations. when the date comes, let's have you back, and let's make a big announcement for that as well. Thank you both. This is the time of year for gratitude. I'm so grateful that you guys are out there, that you're making such a difference with families. And it sounds like, Aaron, what I hear you saying when you're talking to these families is that, you know, these young people are learning to be more grateful. They're learning to be more appreciative.
Absolutely.
And it opens up so much great things in their life. So thank you so much. And I look forward to you being back soon.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. And for everybody out there, please listen to this next message. This is the time to think about others. This is the time to help other people. If you've been listening to the show recently, you know that I have a friend who needs a transplant. And we have a message from her daughter on the things that you can do to help. Thank you, and be with us next week.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com and search One Family's Battle, onefamily_sbattle, and you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank